Montana's Attorney General plans to appeal a judge's immigrant law ruling. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Christopher Allen. A former Butte Catholic school teacher is suing the school district for firing her after finding out she was pregnant and unmarried. And the University of Montana broke ground today on its brand new Missoula College.
Montana's Attorney General plans to challenge a judge's ruling that a voter-approved law that would require immigration checks of anybody applying for state services is unconstitutional. The 2011 Republican-led legislature wrote the proposal meant to deny government jobs and assistance to people who are in the U.S. illegally. Legislators sent the plan to the 2012 ballot, where the referendum passed with nearly 80% of the vote. District Judge Jeffrey Sherlock ruled in June the state law attempts to regulate immigration, which is exclusively a federal power. Department of Justice spokeswoman Anastasia Burton said today that Attorney General Tim Fox intends to appeal the ruling. Attorney Shahid Hauk Hausrath challenged the law on behalf of Montana Immigrant Justice Alliance. He says he is confident the Montana Supreme Court will uphold Sherlock's ruling.
A former Butte Central Catholic Schools teacher who was fired for being pregnant and unmarried is suing the school district. The Montana Standard reports Shayla Evanson filed the lawsuit yesterday, alleging the firing violated federal and state laws that prohibit discrimination based on pregnancy. Evanson taught literature and physical education for grades 6 through 8 for 9 years. She was fired in January after the Roman Catholic Diocese of Helena received a letter about her pregnancy. Evanson became pregnant through artificial insemination and gave birth to a boy on March 7th, the first child for Evanson and her partner, Marilyn Tobin. The district said it fired Evanson for violating the terms of her contract, which required her to practice the tenets of the Catholic faith. Evanson's attorney won a $170,000 jury award in a similar case in Ohio.
Mourners remembered a U.S. Marine Corps veteran and Cascade County Sheriff's deputy as a man who put faith, family, and service first. Joe Dunn was buried yesterday after a memorial service attended by hundreds of law enforcement officers from across the state and as far away as North Dakota and Idaho. His widow, Robin Dunn, told those assembled at Four Seasons Arena that the 33-year-old deputy gave the community his all and his family even more. Dunn was killed August 14th when he was struck by a car during a police chase. Before the memorial service for Dunn, Adam Sanchez Jr. appeared in court on a charge of deliberate homicide in the deputy's death. Prosecutors say Sanchez was high on methamphetamines and deliberately swerved to strike Dunn.
On a blustery, rainy afternoon, several Montana dignitaries gathered just offshore of the Clark Fork River today to officially break ground on construction of the Missoula College's new site. Officials expect construction of the $32 million project to last about 2 years after nearly 8 years of planning and some controversy. College officials considered several other sites, including the 90-year-old University golf course, before funding complications and public protests forced them to look elsewhere. Governor Steve Bullock joined University of Montana President Royce Engstrom, Missoula College Dean Barry Good, Mayor John Engen, and others in addressing a crowd of several hundred people. Dean Good described the new campus as essential for faculty to provide a 21st-century teaching environment for students.
The new facility is so important because it provides modern classrooms fitted with the latest technology, properly equipped laboratories, modern offices, and the interactive spaces.
Asa Homan and Sarah Smith also addressed the crowd about their experience at the two-year college. Both are former Missoula College students pursuing four-year degrees and current members of the Associated Students of the University of Montana. Smith, now an ASUM senator, said the college's move is more than just superficial. It's a necessity.
All Missoula College students who've struggled to sit through classes in sweltering heat or frigid cold, all of these students are gaining the ability to study and grow without additional unnecessary obstacles.
During a brief press conference, President Engstrom said Missoula College, which currently enrolls nearly 2,500 students, has always given people who couldn't attend the University of Montana other educational opportunities, but inside facilities that were just too old and small. In addition to business, health, and culinary programs, Engstrom said the new campus will add an expanded computer technologies programs and new fields of study.
We just are starting right now a certificate program in cybersecurity, a brand new area really for us. And so we will keep developing programs like that over the course of the next several years as the needs grow and come up for us.
Engstrom said the Missoula College's new site, 1 mile away from the main campus, would give students access to the Missoula Library, food services, and the Curry Health Center.
Prior to that groundbreaking ceremony, the President Engstrom presented the annual State of the University Address to faculty, staff, and various guests. The State of the University is an annual speech presented the Friday before the start of autumn semester at UM. It's an opportunity to lay out issues and accomplishments of the past year, as well as goals for the upcoming school year. Engstrom opened by addressing what he described as the hard work UM took on in the past year in the realm of campus safety. It's not the first time he's discussed campus safety during this speech, but it is the first time sexual assault has been directly mentioned.
We were challenged by the issue of campus safety, and particularly the issue of sexual assault. We see now that the nation has recognized sexual assault as a matter of almost epidemic proportions. We were among the first to interact with the Department of Justice through a resolution document. Now, some 75 institutions around the country are going through the same process. We at UM took this matter extremely seriously, recognizing that we have a key responsibility to our students. The educational programming, PETSA, now completed by 20,000 students, has made a difference and has served as a model for other institutions. Difficult a time as that was, we emerged as a stronger institution, a safer campus, much better integrated with Missoula's law enforcement activity, and something of a national leader.
Enrollment at UM has been another significant challenge over the past couple of years. UM's fall semester enrollment last year was 14,525 students. That's 418 fewer than 2012. UM's 2012 fall semester enrollment declined by over 700 from autumn of 2011, which set a record of 15,669 students. This year's fall enrollment won't be known for several weeks, but Engstrom says officials have self-evaluated UM's recruiting and marketing efforts.
We now have a program that includes more vibrant general marketing built around electronic communication and social media. We've completely revamped our recruiting materials and structured an aggressive schedule of contact with prospective students. And we've renewed connections to high schools through our faculty. For example, Brent Ruby and Matt Bundle of the College of Education and Human Sciences took their exciting program around human performance and exercise physiology to students in the Flathead Valley. We live in an extremely competitive environment for students, and we must all play an active role in recruiting and retaining students. And I'm so proud of the way everyone has stepped up to do exactly that.
Engstrom also reaffirmed UM's commitment to a liberal arts education and wants to identify campus programs challenged by low enrollment or relevance and figure out how to strengthen them. Engstrom is also launching a new initiative called Financial Management for Tomorrow's UM, which aims to update and improve outdated campus financial practices and arrangements.
Montana Congressman Steve Dane says he's not against the regulation of the coal industry. But he told a group yesterday at a heavy equipment dealership in Billings he's against unreasonable regulations. The Republican sat down with representatives of business, unions, the Crow Tribe, and others to discuss the latest proposed EPA carbon emissions regulations and the impact it might have on Montana. Jackie Yamanaka reports.
Bob Winger is the retired past president of Boilermakers Local 11. He told Dane shutting down coal-fired power plants will end good-paying careers for boilermakers, pipe fitters, and other iron workers.
You know, we need to have good head-of-household blue-collar work, and this president and the rest of that party are trying to destroy it. And there's no trying to fix coal. They're out to kill it. With the new regulation they've got going, we're not really sure how they're going to play out. But the way it looks like, there's no coal power plant in the country that can meet them.
Winger says the coal industry and power plants need regulation, but he argues environmental groups and the government should work with industry.
I mean, our union negotiated wages weren't given to us. There was strikes, there was all kinds of stuff over the 100 and some years that got us where we are today. The same thing with the scrubbers and all the pollution controls that are local that they've utilized in the country to keep it from being like Southeast Asia. And they have to be forced into doing that. They don't just come along, so rules have to be written.
Others told Danes they're concerned there will be other job losses with tougher EPA power plant emission regulations and that consumers could pay more for electricity. One topic that did not come up during the hour-long roundtable discussion was the impact of CO2 on the climate. When asked about that later, Danes insists balance can be reached between EPA regulations that protect the environment and the impact on jobs and electricity prices.
as we say, we work where we also like to play. But if we don't have a job, we don't get to play in Montana. We don't have a great environment, we don't want to be working here. So I think that's the balance we want to strike here, is we want to have good jobs. We also want to preserve and protect the environment that we love here in Montana.
When asked if he's held similar roundtable discussions with citizens concerned about climate change, Dane says he did earlier this month in western Montana. Jackie Yamanaka, YPR News.
A Billings man who provides transportation to disabled veterans says he was threatened with a $50 fine after appearing in a photograph alongside a newspaper article critical of a new Veterans Administration clinic. Ed Saunders was in an August 15th Billings Gazette photo next to an article about problems with the opening of the $6.3 million clinic. Saunders says a VA police officer told him unauthorized photos on VA property are not allowed. Saunders says Officer Steve McCollum told him the rule was a way to check for terrorism activity. VA spokesman Randy Martin, meanwhile, tells the Gazette the issue is patient privacy. Federal regulations allow news photographs to be taken at VA entrances, lobbies, and other designated places. Saunders says he has not paid the fine, and he believes the threat was to intimidate him.
A 50-year-old Bozeman man who pleaded guilty to embezzling nearly $370,000 from his elderly and disabled clients has been sentenced to 2.5 years in prison in order to pay restitution. William Wise was sentenced yesterday by U.S. District Judge Dana Christensen in Missoula. Wise pleaded guilty to one count of mail fraud in May. Defense attorney Al Avignon says Christensen recommended Wise serve his time at a low-security prison camp in South Dakota. Prosecutors said Wise and another man started a business called Walking Cross Incorporated to manage the finances of the elderly and disabled, including those who received benefits from Social Security, the Veterans Administration, and the U.S. Railroad Retirement Board. Charging documents say that Wise took client money to pay his own bills between September 2008 and January 2012.
A federal judge has blocked a plan that would have led to more roads and increased logging on state land in western Montana that is designated secure habitat for threatened grizzly bears. The 36,700 acres in the Stillwater State Forest is managed as secure core habitat for grizzlies, with restrictions such as a ban on roads closer than a third of a mile away. The State Department of Natural Resources and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service sought to redesignate the area to help the State Department generate more revenue from the lands. Three environmental groups sued to block that plan. U.S. District Judge Donald Malloy ruled yesterday the analysis on the effects on grizzly habitat fell short of what is required in the U.S. Endangered Species Act.
In the forecast tonight, there is a winter weather advisory in effect from 10 o'clock this evening until noon tomorrow for locations above 6,500 feet in the West Glacier, Potomac, and Sealy Lake regions, as well as the Rocky Mountain Front. There's also a lake wind advisory for the Flathead and Mission Valleys until 9 o'clock tonight. West of the Divide, tonight rain showers are likely along with scattered thunderstorms and patchy fog, lows in the 40s. Saturday should be about the same with highs in the upper 50s to mid-60s. Sunday should be a little warmer with highs up in the mid-70s. In central and southwest Montana, expect isolated thunderstorms in the evening with rain throughout the night, lows 45 to 55. Saturday's highs will be in the 50s. Sunday, it'll be around 60 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Dr. Tom Roberts.
Earlier this summer, the medical profession and our country lost a tireless advocate for system change. Dr. Bud Relman died at the age of 91, spending his last few months reading and writing a final article which appeared in the New York Review of Books this month. His thoughtful analysis of a recent book advocating more public health spending was accompanied by a brief obituary written by his wife, Marcia Angel. Dr. Angel has also been a voice of compassion and reason, frequently writing about the entrenchment and abuses of the pharmaceutical industry. She visited Missoula a few years ago and gave a well-received presidential lecture at the university on this topic. Dr. Relman's career spanned many areas, but he's probably best known as editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine during the 70s and 80s, when it became the preeminent medical journal in the country and probably the world. In addition to rigorous attention to the advancement of medical science, under his leadership, the New England Journal began to seriously address the social issues affecting medical care in the U.S. Dr. Relman's article, The New Medical Industrial Complex, published in 1980, described for the first time to those of us who avidly read each new issue the increasing role of the pursuit of profit in healthcare. As I now approach the last of my radio commentaries next month, it's interesting to reflect on how little and how much things have changed. I still look forward to perusing each weekly issue of the New England Journal, though I admit to being mainly interested these days in the opinion pieces. Bud Relman is writing, even from his deathbed, about how to create positive system change. And our profit-driven medical industrial system has expanded way beyond what anybody could have possibly imagined in 1980. The U.S. is now spending over $2.7 trillion every year on health care. This is 17%, or over one-sixth of our entire economy. In 1980, we spent $256 billion, less than one-tenth of what we spend today. That amounted to 9% of GNP, and we thought it was a lot back then. As Dr. Relman and many others who followed in his footsteps understand, it would be impossible to argue that this spending trajectory is either sustainable or ultimately beneficial to the citizens of our country. The facts speak for themselves. We spend about twice as much per person on direct healthcare services as other developed countries in the world. Yet, in just about every measure of effectiveness and equity, as well as overall health status, we rank last in comparison. At the same time, we pay significantly less attention to and invest much less in our public health sphere. Areas that ultimately do make a difference to our health and well-being, like housing, education, maternal and child care, disease prevention, nutrition, environmental safety, and support of our poor, disabled, and elderly, are all poorly funded in comparison to other developed countries. It's not hard to intellectually support the idea of changing our social and medical systems in ways that lower cost and improve health. What is really hard is transforming that goal into workable solutions in the current environment. Dr. Relman had always believed that physician leadership is critical for the kind of health reform that emphasizes people over profits. In fact, this last essay of his, titled A Challenge to American Doctors, and he calls for that leadership while at the same time, I think, realizing it may never happen. Without physicians taking the lead, he says, quote, the future of American health system is bleak, end quote. He predicts that market forces and intrusive government regulations will control how physicians practice, and that the cost of health care will be shifted more and more to individuals who use it because businesses and government cannot afford the continued escalation of these costs. Anyone who's been involved with our medical system since the 70s and 80s has seen tremendous change. Government regulations have already come to strongly affect the structure and practice of medicine. Physicians, more often than not, are now hospital employees, something that was almost never seen in 1980. Running one's own medical office has gone from being difficult to almost impossible, especially for primary care. People are spending more for their care and can expect to pay even more over time. Cost increases may be slowed somewhat because of the Affordable Care Act, and we are providing insurance to more people. But the underlying issues inherent in a profit-driven healthcare system remain. Despite Dr. Relman's encouragement, it seems unlikely that physicians, no matter how compassionate and motivated, are going to unite and ride in on their white horses to save the day. Predicting the future is hard to do. It may indeed be bleak. But we can thank Dr. Relman and all the others to whom he has been a role model for at least trying. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Tom Roberts.
Dr. Tom Roberts is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Christopher Allen. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend.